that spirit, you know, puts you in that like fun, loving spirit. And the thing I love about Key West in general is you can find, you know, people from polar opposite backgrounds that in anywhere else probably wouldn't be getting along. But in Key West, nobody cares. Everyone's just together having a great time. There's a great spirit there, and that was really fun to take into the studio and kind of feed off of that energy.
Now here is this week's featured Backstage Pass artist, Old Dominion, with their song, Memory Lane.
If I could buy a house on Memory Lane, I'd put my money down and sign my name on that little corner lot where it don't ever rain. And we'd stay good as new, like a fresh corner.
Turns out.
listening to America's positively encouraging music program, Power Country with Rich Miller. This program is produced in Nashville, Tennessee at Tim Scott Productions. Hope you'll join us next week. And remember, live, love, encourage somebody, and always be thankful.
98.3 FM WCQM, Park Falls, Wisconsin. The Park Falls Community Broadcasting Corporation. 98Q Country.
This is Radio Health Journal, a weekly news magazine with the latest in health, medicine, and technology. I'm Shel Lustig.
I'm Nancy Benson.
And I'm Elizabeth Westfield. This week, with the rising cost of health insurance, is universal coverage the solution?
Whenever you make people pay for something, there will be people who can't afford it. And if we're committed to providing it, then we need to actually provide it for free.
Then, have early detection tests changed our view of pregnancy?
If we look at an early pregnancy test, for example, they say on them that they're 99% accurate. But they're not 99% accurate at telling you you're going to have a baby in 9 months.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Join Macy's and our nonprofit partners to help address the youth mental health crisis this school year. Now through September 14th, you can fund mental health services and resources when you donate online to the Jed Foundation and the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Or round up your Macy's store purchase up to 99 cents and donate the extra change. Give back today and learn more about our mission to create brighter futures for all at Macy's.com/purpose.
Mr. Clean. Of course I use Mr. Clean Magic Eraser to clean tough messes off my stovetop and bathtub. But then I discovered I can also use it to easily clean my patio furniture and even my shoes. I'm hooked!
And when wipes won't cut it, I use Magic Eraser Sheets. They're thin and flexible erasers, perfect for everyday messes, like gunk on my counters and sinks. They really are magical.
The reviews are in. Mr. Clean Magic Eraser and Sheets make cleaning look easy.
If you take a look at some of the world's wealthiest countries, like Switzerland or Luxembourg, you'll notice that they all have something in common: universal healthcare. This means that everyone is guaranteed the essential health services they need without having to directly pay for it themselves. So why does America's healthcare system look so different? Dr. Amy Finkelstein, professor of economics at MIT, argues that if you look back at the early days of American democracy, you'll see that universal coverage was actually one of the country's goals. Her book, We've Got You Covered, Rebooting American Healthcare, details the history of healthcare in the U.S. and proposes a new plan for universal basic coverage.
It is clear as a society, and this actually goes back to the very dawn of the Republic and some very early health policy by Alexander Hamilton that we talk about in the book, that we have a commitment to make sure that people who need essential medical care should be able to get it regardless of resources. We haven't succeeded. That's why we need reform. But it's very clear if you look at the series of policies that have been put in place to provide coverage for particular groups of people in particular circumstances or with particular illnesses, that that's what we've been trying to do.
Finkelstein's proposal would automatically provide every American with very basic coverage and the option to purchase more depending on their needs. She argues that in order for her plan to succeed, the system would have to be completely reshaped from the ground up. But is there a way to build towards universal coverage without starting from scratch? Dr. Jonathan Oberlander thinks that might be a more feasible option. Oberlander is a professor and department chair of social medicine at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill School of Medicine. He says that the Affordable Care Act was a key step in modern healthcare reform.
I think Amy's model wants to tear down the status quo, and that is understandable because the status quo is terrible. It's inefficient, inequitable, costly, and produces lots of health insecurity. But from a political perspective, it's important to acknowledge we have not enacted healthcare reform in the last half century plus that has not built on what's already there. And so the idea that you can tear down everything we have, Medicare, Medicaid, employer-sponsored insurance, is policy-wise, it's not a bad dream to have. Politically, it's a nightmare. What the Affordable Care Act did in its convoluted way was to build on top of the status quo. And the Affordable Care Act has lots of shortcomings. But on the other hand, Obamacare has lots of successes to it.
The Affordable Care Act, a law passed in 2010, expands insurance coverage for Americans who were previously uninsured. It prevents insurance companies from discriminating based on pre-existing conditions. It also expands Medicaid, a joint federal and state program that provides health insurance for people of low income. Since the passing of the Affordable Care Act, the amount of people without health insurance has dropped significantly, from nearly a quarter of Americans to around one-tenth. But the act still has shortcomings. As Oberlander mentioned, for middle-class Americans who don't qualify for programs like Medicaid, insurance costs remain very high. The law also allows insurance companies to set their deductibles higher than before. These are some of the key reasons Finkelstein thinks the system has to be entirely reworked.
Whenever you make people pay for something, there will be people who can't afford it. And if we're committed to providing it, then we need to actually provide it for free. And that's what's happened in countries that have tried to introduce cost sharing. They've ended up having to provide exceptions and patches and ended up kind of back in the mess we're in. So in that sense, on the there should be no co-pays or cost sharing in the basic coverage, we're much more similar to, say, the UK or Canada, and much less similar to a system, say, like France, which has notoriously high cost sharing.
And for people who need more than basic coverage, Finkelstein's proposal would make patients responsible for only the additional costs.
And so in that sense, our proposal is very different from, say, what happens in the United Kingdom, where, to take one example, British National Health Service will pay for cataract surgery for a patient, the surgeon, and a basic lens. If you want a upgraded, fancier, new generation lens put in, you have to pay not just the incremental cost for that more expensive lens, but you actually have to pay for the surgeon to put in place that lens, whereas it would have been free for he or she to have put in the basic lens. And in our supplemental version, you would only have to pay for the additional stuff that you're getting and not repay for the stuff that would have been covered by the basic system.
While approaches to universal healthcare are usually associated with progressive and left-wing politics, Finkelstein says that her plan takes root in philosophies from both sides of the political divide.
This is actually something that has been embraced by thought leaders and politicians across the political spectrum. It's not actually a liberal or a conservative idea. It's just basic good sense that if we are fundamentally committed to stepping in and attempting to provide essential medical care when people need it, regardless of resources, we might as well formalize and finance that upfront through automatic, universal, basic coverage that's free for everyone, with then giving people the option who want more than the very basic, the things that are really essential, to buy additional coverage in a well-functioning and well-designed marketplace.
According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, Americans spend more on healthcare than nearly every other country in the world. In 2021, the U.S. spent more than $4 trillion on healthcare, which is nearly $13,000 per person. And costs have been steadily rising for years. Today, 1 in 10 Americans lack health insurance, having to pay out of pocket for essential treatments, if they can afford it at all. But Finkelstein says there's an even larger problem at hand.
When we think about the problems of health insurance coverage in the United States, we tend to focus too much on the 1 in 10 Americans under 65 who lack health insurance at a moment in time, and not enough on the fact that more than twice that number, 1 in 4 of us, will spend some period without health insurance over a 2-year period. That health insurance, whose purpose is security and certainty, is itself highly insecure and uncertain.
But given the scope of the healthcare and insurance industries, tearing down a system like this one won't be easy. Out of all of the industries powering the U.S. economy, healthcare has long been one of the largest. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, over 14 million Americans were employed in healthcare occupations last year. And in 2020, amid the pandemic, health insurance companies saw record profits.
We have a $4 trillion healthcare industry, and there are myriad stakeholders in the current arrangements, and they literally profit from the status quo. They have a large stake in the status quo, and they have fought over decades to preserve it. So that makes change hard.
Oberlander says that a universal healthcare model like the one Finkelstein proposes faces a number of challenges.
Another reason change is hard has to do with ideology. We were a country born in political revolution against central government. Fear of government is in our political DNA going all the way back to the American Revolution. And while we have lots of large and popular government programs, among them Medicare and Social Security, there's no question that the libertarian strain, the sort of fear of government idea, is stronger in the United States than in lots of other countries.
Another driving force against change is that the U.S. has already spent so much of its time and resources investing in the current system.
The fact that over the decades, we developed first private employer-sponsored insurance, and then Medicare for older Americans and those with permanent disabilities, and then Medicaid for categories of low-income Americans, and then the Affordable Care Act. We just keep layering on top of layer to the status quo, and that makes it very difficult to move away. There's a lot of inertia sunk into our current arrangements.
The idea of universal healthcare remains a topic of heated debate and intense political polarization. And according to Oberlander, the future of American healthcare will largely be shaped by next year's presidential election.
The next president will help determine which way we go. What is the future of the Medicare program? Do we continue to build on the Affordable Care Act, or do we try and tear it down and erode its gains? Do we think about new mechanisms that can move us closer to universal coverage, or do we think about changes in policy that would actually increase the uninsured population? So this election will have major consequences for the future of healthcare in the United States.
You can find more about Dr. Amy Finkelstein, Dr. Jonathan Oberlander, and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. This segment was written by our associate producer, Tabor Brewster. Our lead producer is Kristen Farah. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, has society started looking at pregnancy through rose-colored glasses? When Radio Health Journal returns.
Each week on the Viewpoints Radio podcast, you'll hear from our leading experts on an important topic within education, history, society, psychology, and more.
If you can show a good money personality, one where you've got good values around how you acquire, how you use, and how you manage money, those patterns will be passed along generations.
Viewpoints Radio podcast is produced by our team of award-winning journalists. Subscribe today by searching Viewpoints Radio wherever you listen to podcasts.
Girl, I have a secret. When I get stressed out, I get sweaty. That's why I use Secret Clinical Antiperspirant. It's like my own secret weapon. For 72 hours, I get Secret's strongest protection against sweat caused by stress, heat, and activity, because you know how crazy life can get. Plus, it's made with advanced odor fighters that don't just cover up smelliness. They help prevent it from happening in the first place. Believe me, if I weren't wearing Secret, I'd be a hot, smelly mess. Thankfully, Secret works.
Even with all of our medical advancements, pregnancy can still go wrong. Yes, we've created better practices for both the mother and baby, but there's still a lot of uncertainty in the 9 months before birth, particularly right after conception. Dr. Laura Friedenfels is a historian of health, reproduction, and parenting in America, and says that many expectant mothers aren't told the realities of pregnancy. And though she's now a pro raising her two teenagers, Friedenfeld says she went into her first pregnancy completely naive.
Part of what's crazy about that is that I was about to get a PhD doing research in women's health, and I had no idea.
Friedenfeld told everyone immediately after she found out, from her friends and family to her dance teachers. She had no idea that up to 26% of all pregnancies end in miscarriage, or that she would become part of that statistic. She just assumed that being pregnant meant she'd soon have a little baby in her arms.
But I will say it was a blessing in disguise to have told people, because then when I had the miscarriage, I also needed to tell people. And that was when I found out that about half of my friends had also had a miscarriage. And I had no idea. So finding that out made me feel much more supported. And I wish that I had known it ahead of time, because if I had known, if we had all felt free to tell about our pregnancies and our miscarriages in a matter-of-fact way ahead of time, I would have gone into my pregnancy much more realistic about the chances.
In 2020, Friedenfels published her book, The Myth of the Perfect Pregnancy, A History of Miscarriage in America. She argues that modern technology and marketing strategies have given us a false sense of safety and an unrealistic view of pregnancy. Historically, the process was believed to be unstable until around 4 months, when they'd first feel the baby kick.
That has shifted tremendously, the way that we understand early pregnancy, for many reasons, for scientific developments and medical developments in our understanding of embryology and fetal development, of course, but also in cultural understandings of parenting and of reproduction.
The U.S. Census estimates that women in 1800 had an average of 8 children, but there was an expectation that not all of them would survive. The 2022 revision of world population prospects reports that nearly half of every 1,000 babies didn't make it to their 5th birthday during this time period.
Some will become children, and some of those children we will lose. That's how people thought about things in colonial America. Now, we luckily can save most of our children, can count on them growing to adulthood, and we can control our reproduction with birth control, so we feel confident we can plan most of our pregnancies. And we then expect also that our pregnancies should go well and should develop into born children.
Today, we have just 7 deaths per 1,000 births, a dramatic difference that's the product of better technology and knowledge. But Friedenfels says the sense of control we feel isn't realistic. No amount of planning can guarantee that once you become pregnant, you'll be able to stay pregnant.
And I think that that message is not out there, partly because there's been shame and stigma for a very long time around miscarriage. But also, I think because people feel so invested in their pregnancies, our healthcare providers are reluctant to be the bearers of this sort of bad news ahead of time, saying, you know, don't count on it because we don't know if it's stable yet. Most of them feel like they'll just contribute to our worry. But unfortunately, that's made people feel like they ought to be able to make their pregnancies go well if they do everything right, when in fact, we don't have that much control. And we can end up feeling more sad and maybe guilty when we inevitably have miscarriages.
Women in their 30s and 40s have up to a 35% chance of miscarriage, while women over age 45 have a 50% risk. A majority of all losses happen within the first 5 weeks, before many women even know they're pregnant.
If we knew about all of our pregnancies, all of our conceptions, we'd see that actually more than half of them don't grow to become born children. That actually the way human biology works, we lose more of our conceptions than we're actually able to sustain.
This mindset can be difficult to put into practice, especially with all of the incredible tools we now have. Early detection pregnancy tests can give results as soon as 6 days before the first missed period. Smartphone apps can track our baby's growth, often showing visual comparisons of a grape or avocado. Friedenfels says this technology is extremely valuable, but we need to use it with a different outlook.
If we look at an early pregnancy test, for example, they say on them that they're 99% accurate. And that's true if you're talking about being able to detect human chorionic gonadotropin, which is the hormone that they detect. But they're not 99% accurate at telling you you're going to have a baby in 9 months. So if you take it the first day that they say that you can take it, you have a 70% chance of having a baby in 9 months. And I think that statistic would be really helpful to people so that they understand that this is a hormone test, not a test of I have a successful pregnancy.
Friedenfels says these early detection tools have contributed to this gradual shift in how society views pregnancy. Another aspect is that most American families aren't having 8 or 10 kids anymore. 2022 U.S. Census report shows that the average number of biological children per family is 0.78. Friedenfels says a driving force behind this decline is that a drastically higher number of babies survive to live into adulthood, so we don't need to hedge our bets.
which is amazing. But it gives us this different kind of expectation of what the entire process should look like. And so, and we have better prenatal care that began in the early 20th century. We have better birth care. Changes in medical care in general have made pregnancy in general safer for the mother, so that instead of thinking primarily thinking, I hope I survive the birth, women can think about the pregnancy and the child that they're hoping for.
By the 1950s, women were giving birth in hospitals and had access to antibiotics. All of a sudden, having a hemorrhage was no longer a death sentence. They were able to start focusing more on their baby. As the attention shifted, so did marketing campaigns.
During the course of the 20th century, we saw this huge explosion of a market in baby goods. And this was, again, came out of a very fortunate thing, which is many more people had the money to spare to spend on their children, which we all enjoy very much. And I don't want to take that away from anyone. But the question is, when do we do that spending? And doing that spending earlier and earlier in pregnancy has actually then built up our expectations about this already being the child who we are preparing for.
This doesn't mean that you shouldn't be excited about your pregnancy. However, Friedenfels advocates for a more gradual and realistic view of the early days until you reach the 4-month mark.
Having that come on board gradually is really very normal and fits our biology very well, as opposed to a pregnancy test, which is measuring a chemical that we can't see, that gives us a certain kind of information that's actually more uncertain than what we think. Somehow we interpret it because it's a medical scientific test that it has this kind of certainty that it doesn't really have. That if we allowed ourselves to enter pregnancy gradually and let it become real gradually, the way that it does in your physical experience of it, we'd be better in line with the biological reality of how long it takes for that pregnancy to be secure.
And while there's never a 100% guarantee at any stage of pregnancy, the risk of a miscarriage drastically declines in the second and third trimesters.
And if we see that all as a developmental process that takes some time and don't rush into the parts that we're not developmentally ready for, it might make the miscarriages that we have less distressing than they currently are for many people. If we could tell people that way, we could help each other know that this is not a sure thing yet. You know, don't send baby gifts. Don't tell me your name ideas. Just hang on and I'll update you. If we could share that gradual unfolding with people and they could understand, because if we all had a common understanding that this is a process and that thing, there's no security here till at least the end of the first trimester. If we all had that understanding, we could share, say, cross your fingers, hope with me that this is going to stick, that then we could support each other without that pressure.
You can find more information about Dr. Laura Friedenfels and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Nancy Benson. Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
Liberty Mutual presents How to Be the Life of the Party.
Okay, first turn the music off. Then ask for everyone's attention. Now, tell them that you customized your home insurance with Liberty Mutual and saved hundreds. Boom! Now everyone knows you're not just a pretty face. You have some brains inside that face that know how to save hundreds on home insurance. Woo!
Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com. Based on recent survey of new customers who switched and saved, underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Excludes Massachusetts.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Happy 62nd birthday, Granddad.
Thanks, sweetheart.
I got you this.
A mug. Oh, thank you. What does it say? Beware. If you are 60 or older, you may be at increased risk of hospitalization from RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, compared to adults younger than 60.
Not all dangers come with warning labels. Talk to your pharmacist or doctor about getting vaccinated against RSV today. Learn more at bewareofrsv.com. Brought to you by Pfizer.
Each week on the Viewpoints Radio podcast, you'll hear from our leading experts on an important topic within education, history, society, psychology, and more.
If you can show a good money personality, one where you've got good values around how you acquire, how you you use and how you manage money, those patterns will be passed along generations.
Viewpoints Radio Podcast is produced by our team of award-winning journalists. Subscribe today by searching Viewpoints Radio wherever you listen to podcasts.
Join Macy's and our nonprofit partners to help address the youth mental health crisis this school year. Now through September 14th, you can fund mental health services and resources when you donate online to the Jed Foundation and the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Or round up your Macy's store purchase up to 99 cents and donate the extra change. Give back today and learn more about our mission to create brighter futures for all at Macy's.com/purpose.
Medical notes this week. Is your breast milk toxic? A recent study in environmental pollution finds that 88% of the breast milk they tested contains harmful toxins called brominated flame retardants. These chemicals are used in electronic devices like TVs to make them less flammable. They can cause a number of health problems like brain development issues and hormone disruption. This is the first time scientists have seen this kind of pollutant building up in humans. Now, you might already be protected from COVID and its variants. Research in Science Advances shows that newly discovered antibodies can defend the body against COVID-19 and nearly all of its variants. This includes Omicron, Alpha, Beta, Gamma, and Delta. The antibodies were found in a patient who had recovered from severe acute respiratory syndrome. Scientists say this discovery may soon lead to advances in drugs designed to protect against coronaviruses. And finally, doctors might soon be giving out tattoos. Engineers have developed nanotechnology that can be imprinted onto cells within a living body. These microscopic devices are made of gold and stick to the outside of cells, much like a temporary tattoo that's 10 times smaller than the tip of a pin. Scientists say that similar technology may one day be used to track the health of individual cells to prevent and treat diseases. This research is published in the journal Nano Letters. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Shel Lustig.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR positive HER2 negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more. And check Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and information about our guests at RadioHealthJournal.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
Adventure begins at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. 16 stages filled with sword fighting, fire breathing, music, magic, juggling, and more. Delicious food and drink fit for royalty. Live armored jousting, and our marketplace is a shopper's dream. 7 weekends from August 19th through October 1st. Get your discount tickets today at renaissancefest.com. Park and ride recommended or prepaid parking passes required. Huzzah! More information to plan your adventure at renaissancefest.com.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, how you doing? Haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could be lower testosterone.
Lower T.
Yeah, I went through it a while back. Once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone. I got Nugenix Total T, and it's made a huge difference for me.
I've seen that on TV. Is it for real?
Oh, yeah. The patented key ingredient is something called Testofen, which helps boost free and total testosterone levels to help you trim up and stay lean.
And it's made made a difference for you?
Man, I feel like I'm in my 20s again. At work, in the gym, and in the bedroom.
Are they still giving out complimentary bottles for people to try it for themselves?
Yeah, you just need to send them a text.
Text STAPLE to 321-321 right now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, to help you get back into shape fast, absolutely free. Text STAPLE to 321-321. That's STAPLE to 321-321.
The Furman Insurance Agency in downtown Park Falls has been serving the local community for over 40 years, specializing in home, auto, and business insurance. Don't forget the toys. No one can predict the future, but we can help protect it. Give Christy or Jamie a call at 715-762-4046. Furman Insurance Agency. Let us help you protect what's important.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you too can live and serve part-time, close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Imagine getting ahead of your irritable bowel syndrome with constipation or IBS-C by treating it with Linzess. Then you could start proactively managing your constipation with belly pain and get ahead of your symptoms. Talk to your doctor about Linzess, linaclotide. Linzess is a prescription medicine that treats IBS-C in adults. It's not a laxative. It's a once-daily pill that helps you get ahead of your symptoms. It's proven to help you have more frequent and complete bowel movements and helps relieve overall abdominal symptoms, belly pain, discomfort, and bloating. These symptoms were studied in combination, not individually.
Do not give Linzess to children less than 2. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling.
Imagine, what could relief from IBS-C mean for you? Talk to your doctor and say yes to Linzess. Learn more at Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS.
Here's your 98 Q Country weatherology forecast. Chance for isolated showers today, otherwise overcast. Highs around 64, northeasterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Slight chance for isolated rain showers. Lows level off around 48. Chance for isolated rain showers again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 62, overcast skies. Temperatures a bit below average Tuesday and Wednesday, with highs from the upper 50s to the low 60s. Chance for scattered rain showers Tuesday. Another look at the short range, high of 64 today, lows level off around 48 tonight, we should top off around 62 tomorrow. I'm weatherology meteorologist Paul Trombley, and that's your forecast on 98 Q Country. Right now, 54.
This week on Viewpoints.
You can make so much money being an influencer, but not only that, you are able to have freedom in a way that is really tantalizing to so many people.
2 out of every 3 humans on Earth are on social media. We dive into the business behind influencing. Then,
I feel like I have too much to give. I have a whole life ahead of me, and I don't want to leave my legacy to be that of a drug trafficker.
Why Chicago's biggest drug trafficker is teaching police all of his secrets. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
I'm getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20.
So am I, because I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine. It can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Snapchat, TikTok, Instagram. These are just some of the top social media platforms today. Fast forward 10 years and who knows what kinds of apps will be leading the pack. Remember when MySpace was all the rage? Or when, in the late 2000s, everyone started migrating over to a hot new concept called Facebook? It's not unusual for social media sites to come and go, but one aspect that's ever-present is the dominance of influencers in this space. In short, an influencer is someone who makes money online by creating content that appeals to a certain viewer. Today, there are influencers to fill every niche. Whether they post their workouts or theme park reviews or their latest shopping hauls. Communities with similar interests form around them and tune into every upload.
A lot of people want to be influencers now, especially young people. And it's easy to see why. I mean, you can make so much money being an influencer, but not only that, you are able to have freedom in a way that is really tantalizing to so many people, especially, you know, here in the US. You really don't have to work for anyone. You can build your own business. You can, many influencers start their platform and then are able to start, you know, brick and mortar businesses on the back of that. You know, that is really the American dream.
That's Stephanie McNeil, a senior editor at the women's magazine Glamour and the author of Swipe Up for More: Inside the Unfiltered Lives of Influencers. To get a better idea of the industry and the people within it, McNeil spent 3 years up close with three prominent influencers. Go back 20 years and this kind of role didn't even exist. Today, close to 5 billion people across the world are on social media. That's about 2/3 of the human race. With so many eyeballs online, there's a lot of money up for grabs for those who have built up a large online following. For example, last year Dove, a personal body care brand, paid influencers with roughly 50,000 followers around $5,000 per sponsored post or reel. That's a lot of money for one campaign, but McNeil says that this high pay comes at a high cost.
The ticket that you cash in and that tightrope that you walk is that your entire life is up for public consumption, which means the public can make you so they can keep you on the tightrope, but they can also very easily knock you down. And if you want to be an influencer, you have to go into it with your eyes wide open and realize, I am giving up a certain level of privacy for this. I am giving up. I am just have to expect that I am going to get a certain level of online scrutiny on the more positive end, but also really gross, mean DMs, bullying, all of that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, it's just kind of the price you have to pay. And I think some people would say, if you're making money off of being a public figure, that's fine. But on a personal level, my opinion is I don't think it needs to be quite as vitriolic as it is. But, you know, that's kind of up for people to debate.
McNeil jumps back to 10 or 20 years ago when celebrity gossip magazines were at their peak. She says this same space still exists now, it's just moved elsewhere. These conversations are happening on social media, blogs, and online forums.
I used to read Us Weekly and People in the grocery store when my mom was shopping when I was like 10 years old. The pop culture obsession runs deep. And those magazines could be very cruel to celebrities, picking apart their outfits and all of that kind of stuff. But now it is so much bigger. It's in real time, people respond to you, and it's just fed this beast of online discussion where really, you know, it's not just influencers, celebrities, public figures, politicians. There's just perpetual dissection of their lives in every space on the internet.
Women do make up the majority of influencers, and one specific subsect is momfluencers. There's a lot of interest in accounts that give an inner look into what it's like to be a parent. McNeil says this kind of content opens up a larger conversation about the ethics of broadcasting kids online.
I think it's something that we really need to discuss with nuance. And I think that one thing that I've noticed in the past few years is people really come at it from a very attack dog sort of way, where I've seen a couple articles written where people are like, this is horrible, the kids are going to hate it. And, you know, I think it's a spectrum. And as I discuss in the book, unfortunately, there are no laws in place for how children can be used in content on the internet. And it is really left up to the discretion of the parent. And unfortunately, we really can't rely on parents to make the best choices for their children 100% of the time. You know, we see that in every aspect of society.
As a possible solution, she highlights how Hollywood protects child actors by enforcing certain regulations.
There are laws in Hollywood where kids can only work a certain amount of time, a certain percentage of their earnings needs to be put into a trust. And I think that the trust, if children are being used in paid advertisements on the internet, I think that some sort of law requiring that some of those proceeds will be put aside for them would be really great. I also think that there should be some sort of restriction on how much kids are used, how often they are filmed.
Just last month, Illinois became the first state to pass a law requiring that children be compensated if they're part of monetized content. This law goes into effect next July and includes specifics on how much the child should be paid based on how frequently they appear in videos or posts. The law also says that all payments must go into a future trust fund that the child can access once they reach a certain age. It also allows teenagers who are 18 or older to take legal action against their parents if they were part of monetized content but were never properly compensated. This Illinois law is the first of many future protections for those who share their lives publicly online. Who knows what the space will look like even 5 years from now? To find out more about this topic and our guest, Stephanie McNeil, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, how police are getting the upper hand in the war on drugs when Viewpoints returns.
Join Macy's and our nonprofit partners to help address the youth mental health crisis this school year. Now through September 14th, you can fund mental health services and resources when you donate online to the Jed Foundation and the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Or round up your Macy's store purchase up to 99 cents and donate the extra change. Give back today and learn more about our mission to create brighter futures for all at Macy's.com/purpose.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I learned about atrial fibrillation the hard way. My symptoms would come and go, shortness of breath, fatigue. I kept going. Then I got so lightheaded, I couldn't. My doctor said I have AFib, so I'm about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. Other symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, can come and go, but the risk of stroke stays. If you have symptoms, tell a doctor. Visit notimetowait.com.
Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
And Doug. With Liberty Mutual, you can customize and save hundreds on your car insurance. But what to buy with those savings? Yep, I bought a sound effects machine.
Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com. Savings may vary, underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates, excludes Massachusetts.
Liberty, 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 liberty. Mr. Clean, Mr. Clean.
Of course I use Mr. Clean Magic Eraser to clean tough messes off my stovetop and bathtub. But then I discovered I can also use it to easily clean my patio furniture and even my shoes. I'm hooked.
And when wipes won't cut it, I use Magic Eraser Sheets. They're thin and flexible erasers, perfect for everyday messes, like gunk on my counters and sinks. They really are magical.
The reviews are in. Mr. Clean Magic Eraser and Sheets make cleaning look easy.
Margarito Flores Jr. was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, but his childhood was far from normal. By the time he and his twin brother were 8 years old, their father had introduced them to the world of drug trafficking. They continued the family business into adulthood, becoming the biggest drug kingpins in the city. However, the law eventually caught up with them, and the brothers fled to Mexico and got involved with the Sinaloa cartel. Growing up, they'd looked up to the group, which at the time was led by Mexican drug lord El Chapo. But during a Viewpoints Radio exclusive interview, Flores says the reality of working within the cartel wasn't all that glamorous.
Once we were doing business with them and once we kind of found out like what it really was, like the whole cartel as a whole and what it was doing to our families. You know, my brother had been kidnapped twice before. My father had been kidnapped and so much suffering that came with it. I think that it was maturity. It was us just wanting something better for our children and for our future.
Flores always knew that his line of work put his own life in danger, but he assumed his family was safe. This all changed the moment he saw someone put a gun to his wife's head. After that incident, he started to doubt whether he could lead the same life.
My brother and I were able to live in the drug trafficking world or do business in it without changing who we were. We kept it strictly business, and we were able to survive that way for a long time. But in the position I was in, I felt like it was only going to make us make decisions, and we were going to become something we were not. So that means me more being violent or, you know, having to be involved in taking someone's life. And I think that we always said that we had to like stand up for who we were. And I felt like now we were going to be in a position that I was going to be like everyone else. And that didn't sit well with me.
This internal conflict all came to a head one morning when Flores woke up, turned to his wife and said he was switching sides. He'd decided to become an informant in return for a reduced prison sentence.
I remember my brother and I talking about, like, we risked our life to do wrong each and every day. You know, why not risk our life to do something good for our family? And it was just to be able to be a father, just to have the chance that I'm able to have today where I'm able to be a father and a husband and do the simple things in life, like take your kids to school, you know? It's something I never got a chance to do.
The deal with the police required Flores and his brother to stay in the Sinaloa cartel as undercover informants for a period of time. For Flores, it was a high-stress situation because he was now working against the industry he'd been in since he was a child.
I was raised by a very strong, opinionated man who was totally against working with the police. My father was in prison because of an informant, and he blamed the informant for his suffering. And it was something I actually thought about. Of course, over the years, being in drug trafficking, there was plenty of informants who were cooperating against us, and I always looked at it as part of a business.
Flores says that for people like him who want to leave the drug trade, becoming an informant is the last resort. There's definite risk, but informants help keep some of the most dangerous criminals behind bars.
You see it all the time, especially in situations like mine, where looked at as probably the scum of society or whatever the case may be, but it's needed. I think cooperators, informers is needed because if you look at even the Chapo trial, if it wasn't for informers or cooperators like myself and others, you know, you wouldn't have a case against one of the biggest drug lords or one of the most deadliest drug cartels like the Sinaloa cartel.
Both Flores and his brother were key in the case against El Chapo and recently finished serving their 14-year prison sentence. Now Flores is once again teaming up with investigators. This time, it's a law enforcement training company called Dynamic Police Training. Sergeant Ryan Wasson oversees special investigations for Kane County in Illinois and hopes this inside information will help officers catch more criminals who are transporting and distributing drugs. Wasson says that finding the narcotics is usually the first step, but it's no easy task.
A lot of people, I think when they watch live PD or cops on TV that it starts and ends with the traffic stop, or it starts and ends with the location of narcotics. And what they don't understand is that sometimes that case has been 2 years in the making before it even gets to the traffic stop. So you could have people that work very diligently for 2 years before they even see some sort of seizure of money or narcotics.
But now and then, law enforcement does get lucky. Sometimes cops notice something strange about a car driving on the highway. Whether it's a rental car with heavily tinted windows or a driver acting odd as they pass by.
Most people even myself being a police officer and have been a police officer for a few years, even when I see another officer on the side of the road doing some sort of traffic enforcement, I get a little bit of that. Oh no, was I speeding? Was I going too fast? I better watch my speed. So you get a little bit of that nervous, natural nervousness. But when it gets a little bit weird is if you can see differences in a normal person's reaction to law enforcement and somebody who's really nervous that law enforcement is there, maybe abnormally nervous they're there, and the way that they drive their vehicle, the way that they react to us.
Once the car is pulled over, the search begins. Unlike in the movies, most of the time the drugs aren't neatly piled in a duffel bag in the trunk. Canine units are often needed to sniff out any narcotics, and usually the drugs are stowed away in hidden compartments.
We trust our dogs, and so if our dog indicates, we know that something's there. We just may not be able to find it. So what they'll do, they can change vehicles in a number of different ways, and they get very clever. But a lot of the things that we deal with, and I'm sure you've heard of, are compartments. They'll make false compartments that they'll make in the vehicle. Now, a lot of times those compartments might be a factory compartment.
Drug traffickers are always thinking of new ways to hide their products, so it's a constantly changing game. Wasson hopes that Flores will help provide some insight into the minds of these criminals. While this could be a great opportunity, he notes that there's always a small chance that informants won't be completely honest.
I've been in this job long enough. I've worked with informants for a really long time, sources, and you don't always get accurate information. Sometimes you have to vet that information. And I think as most of the investigators that will be there are going to be seasoned enough to realize that they need to not just take everything he says 100%, but go and do some vetting. I don't necessarily know that he has any reason to lie to us at this point, given his background and everything that he's been involved in. I don't know how that would benefit him. So I kind of look at that as well. What's his motivation to come help us right now? And I think his motivation at this point is a decent motivation. But at the same time, as investigators, we have to do our jobs and vet the information that comes to us.
Regardless, Wasson says that both police and society have to be careful not to romanticize these once criminals.
I'm a huge believer in second chances. I believe that as humans, we all make mistakes, and some of those mistakes are more severe than others. But I'm a huge believer in giving that person a second chance to kind of make amends for the mistakes that they've made. That being said, I also believe that there are some people that will continually manipulate the system if we allow them to. Unfortunately, sometimes society glamorizes people that have made a life of victimizing other people. And I, being in law enforcement, I have to have a problem with that. I don't want to glamorize somebody who has victimized thousands, hundreds, or even a couple people.
Wasson has been burned by a source before. Years ago, when he worked in California, he started talking to a member of the Mexican mafia after he'd been sentenced to prison. At first, he was helpful, but as time went on, he began to play both sides of the law.
What he was doing is when investigators would bring him information and ask him to help decode it or bring meaning to it, he had access to the internet and was posting that information on private blogs. So the biggest issue with that was, obviously, we have intel coming in that needs to be extremely confidential and is coming through him as a trusted source, and he was putting it out to the very individuals we were trying to keep it from.
Which is why Wasson says any information needs to be vetted. Still, he hopes that Flores will not only be able to give them actionable information now, but continue to work with law enforcement to help train future generations of investigators. And while the issue of safety will always be top of mind for Flores, he says the risk is worth it.
I feel like either I could, crawl under a rock or try to hide somewhere, but I feel like I have too much to give. I have a whole life ahead of me, and I don't want to leave my legacy to be that of a drug trafficker. I feel like I was put here for a reason, and I feel like this could be my calling, to be able to help law enforcement and share my experiences and share everything I've been through and hopefully make a difference on the war on drugs.
You can find more information about Margarito Flores Jr., Sergeant Ryan Wasson, and all of our guests on our website, viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Viewpoints Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our writer-producer this week is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.